What's going on, guys? My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. That guy in the purple shirt asked me to speak 10 minutes ago, so I have nothing prepared. I'm going to ramble, and hopefully within this 15 minutes, someone gets something beneficial out of it. So my name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since February 15th, 2014. I have just about a year and a little over 3 months now. I'm not even from Tampa. I hesitate to raise my hand when people ask if there's any visitors in the room because I've been here like a month now, but I'm on like an extended visit. I'm living with my uncle in North Tampa. I'm from Virginia Beach, Virginia, in the Hampton Roads area. That's where I grew up and spent pretty much my entire life. Did not get sober there, though. I got sober in Blacksburg, Virginia at Virginia Tech. I got sober my last 3 months of college. A lot of people, I tell them that and they're like, seriously, dude, that sounds horrible. I'm like, yeah, it was horrible. So where to begin? Actually, I want to say that I'm grateful I was asked to speak, despite inherently I don't want to do this at all. But I recognize, you know, that situations of discomfort are what allow us the opportunity to grow. If we continue to stay in situations in which we're comfortable and aren't pushed, then we won't grow. And so as much as I inherently kind of hate doing this, I invite the opportunity and am grateful that I've been asked to do this. A lot of people start by saying, you know, they had like that normal childhood, mom, dad, brother, sister, dog, white picket fence, two-story house, and then their alcoholism took over and everything got crazy. I didn't have that. I had like a really shitty, miserable childhood. I grew up a single child of a single mother who was an alcoholic as well. We lived in a two-bedroom condo for 15 years, so there was a lot of tension. It was a very hostile environment for a long, long time. I do have a large family, though. I have a father, a stepmom, an 11-year-old little brother, a 32-year-old older brother, and a 36-year-old older sister. I'm 23 for scale. But none of those people were players in my life, so to speak, growing up. I was estranged from all of them. So I grew up as an only child. Like I said, I grew up with my alcoholic mother. I remember, you know, growing up, I was doing all my homework after school in bars. I remember if you go to a bar, I'm not suggesting it, but imagine if you were in a bar, there'd be like this little thing in the corner, like a touch screen TV where you can play games on it for like a quarter or something. I remember I would constantly be going to all the different drunks at the bar asking for quarters so I could keep playing games at that TV and just binge drinking Sprite. I was already just hooked up on the sugar. My alcoholic tendencies were really apparent in my childhood before I even took a drink, so I don't really know if they were learned traits from being around so many alcoholics as a child or if it really is an inherent part of me. It doesn't really matter at this point, but you know, looking back with the clarity I have today, it's really easy to see that I always have been and probably always will be an alcoholic in the way that I perceive the world and act on that. I remember I played a lot of video games as a kid, and I did it completely alcoholically. I was never like a extroverted, like I was not a social butterfly or like the kid in school who was emotionally healthy to any extent. I was like messed up, but I was really smart, so I always got good grades. So, you know, they don't start telling the guidance counselors to go look at your home life when you have good grades, even though you're clearly depressed clinically every day of your life. But I remember I had a Game Boy. I played my Game Boy every single day. I played all the time. I would smuggle it into school, play it in school, like obsessively. When I would wake up, and it was the first thing I'd think about was I need to go play Pokemon. That's the first thing I'm going to do when I wake up. And I would do it right up to going to bed. I would be in bed playing with my face, you know, in this little Game Boy, completely, you know, trying to escape reality. It's a completely escapist alcoholic behavior that I was doing when I was 7 years old. I remember I had some other video games, you know. I thought I liked to collect video games. I don't know what I was doing. I realize now I was just trying to fill the void inside my soul. So you could go to like GameStop and sell three video games and get like $5 and then maybe buy a new video game. So I was constantly trying to like hustle and get money so I could get new video games. So I'd be selling my old video games to get one new video game. I would be begging people to get me some more video games so I can then take those video games, sell them to get one new game, And then this went on, you know, I had like all these video games, and I'm like constantly selling them, trying to get a new one, trying to get something that'll make me happy. It's never making me happy. It's never fulfilling me. And in the end, I'm left with nothing because I'm constantly selling, you know, anything I have for just a little bit, a glimmering hope. And I don't know. I was just reflecting on that earlier today. I started drinking when I was 15 years old. From the minute I started drinking, I drank alcoholically, straight to blackout. I did not like alcohol at first. I was drinking it to try to gain the respect of some people around me. I had no internal respect. I did not respect myself, and I didn't have any real self-confidence at this point in my life. And so I thought that if I were to drink, I could sort of dispel this image of me being like this nerdy, introverted loser who is in high school and is just going to be like this loser for 4 years. I was like, no, I'm going to be one of the drug addicts. Yeah, I'm going to fit in. But like, I'd rather have that than that. You know, it was the lesser of two evils at that point. But little did I know how low it was going to take me. So I remember drinking initially, and I was forcing down, you know, 40 ounces of malt liquor or you know, straight liquor, whatever. You know, we were just drinking anything we could get our hands on, me and another group of people who also shared some of my similar internal afflictions. I reflect on that, you know, how I started drinking, how I was forcing it into me to try to gain, you know, the respect of the people around me, and to chase that fleeting feeling of joy that seemed to come to me when I drank. And it's like such a crazy, like complete 180 to what it was in the end, where I could not stop pouring, you know, Mad Dog into me. There was no fleeting joy. It was complete misery, and there was nobody left around me because nobody respected me, and I didn't respect myself. So if you're on the beginning end of the scale, don't try it. It doesn't work. I have 10 minutes. So I started drinking really hard in high school, and within a year, I was doing all kinds of other drugs. I started smoking, you know, other drugs, and I don't know the context. I did a bunch of other drugs in high school, and I got really, things got really out of hand. I wound up getting expelled from high school, and that was really crazy because I was like one of the top students. I had straight A's in most of my classes, and I wound up getting kicked out of my high school. Then social services looked at my home. You know, they saw that I was living alone with an alcoholic mother and how bad my life kind of seemed. And so I took that situation, and under the veil of telling these people that if they get me out of my home, that I'll be able to get my life straight, I'll escape all this misery and this bad environment, that then I'll be able to, like, you know, not have to resort to these drugs and stuff. That was the veil. In reality, I just wanted to get away from anybody who wanted to control me at all so that I could drink and drug as I wanted to. And so I basically created this entire facade. I was living a delusion, living a lie, but really all I wanted to do was seek more and more drugs to try to ease this pain that I carried around inside of me. I went through high school, you know, perpetuating these problems. After I graduated my high school, I moved back in with my mother. I don't know why I thought that would be a good idea at that time. I was particularly addled out of my mind on drugs and alcohol. And I came home one night, and an unfortunate series of events followed. And my mother was unconscious the next day, and she actually never regained consciousness. She died 5 days later in the hospital on life support. She died because she lived a very unhealthy alcoholic lifestyle. She was withering away for years, and there was nothing I could do to help. But for a long time, I blamed myself for that. And so after that, you know, the way I was drinking before that, I thought I had like a lot of pain that I was trying to suppress with my drinking. Afterwards, I had a lot of pain that I really had to suppress. I didn't even have the option of not drinking anymore. I really couldn't bear to try to face any of the emotions that I'd been suppressing for so long. So I lived in Virginia Beach for another year there, and I wound up going to community college because, you know, I kept putting on this facade of being like an intelligent student pursuing something with his life. I kept trying to keep everybody off my back so they wouldn't look at my drinking. So I thought if I went to community college and pursued like a cool degree or a respected degree like engineering, everybody would think that that I was doing okay. So I did that for a year, decided that sucked. Then I transferred to college, thinking that if I just got away from this situation, everything would get better. Of course, I followed myself there, and it was horrible right off the bat. Even within like the college context, I was drinking more than everybody else around me. I was drinking harder. My neighbors and these my poor roommates that didn't even know me before I moved in with them had no idea, you know, how to handle me. I was a complete menace to society. I was a menace to the college. On my 21st birthday, I passed out unconscious in the middle of the road on the Virginia Tech campus, right in front of like their most famous building that they put on all like the postcards of the campus. And they woke me up at like 3 in the morning thinking I was dead, and I blew like a .36 or something, and they, you know, asked me if I wanted to go to the hospital or jail, and I colorfully told them I'd like to go to jail. And you know, I was telling them all kinds of stuff, like, I do this every weekend, you guys don't know anything. I thought if I went to jail that it'd be easier for me to cover up. If I went to the hospital, there'd be more paperwork. Just delusional thinking. So then I had to represent myself, do a bunch of stuff for the college so I didn't get kicked out. A year went by, you know, on good behavior. I got arrested again, did pretty much the same exact thing. And at this point in my life, I really, really hated myself. I could not stand to look at myself in the mirror. I can't remember how long I had gone without being able to look other people in the eyes. I couldn't go on living like this anymore. It was either death or attempt sobriety. So I figured, you know, we can attempt sobriety at least first. So I went to this little brick building right down the street from my house, like right there. It had been there the whole time. For 3 years, there had been an AA meeting within a 3-minute walking distance from my house. And I knew it was there because every day when I drove to 7-Eleven to get my Mad Dogs, my daily ration of 3 Mad Dogs, I would drive by this little building, and in the window there's the circle with the triangle inscribed. And, you know, I would curse and mutter to myself. I knew what it was. I knew that was an AA building, and I knew I belonged in there. I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew there were happy people in there that had gotten through what I got through. I just didn't hurt enough to go do it yet. Fortunately, or perhaps even unfortunately, it came to a point where I did hurt enough to go in there. And I crawled in there. Metaphorically, I walked in there. But there was like 3 feet of snow on the ground, so it might as well have been a crawl. It was like, you know, of course everybody, the worst things in your life happen in a drunk inspired by a blizzard. But I went in there, and the first face I saw, I remember, was this guy named Brendan. He was another college student, like right about my age. And immediately it didn't feel so daunting or intimidating. You know, I immediately related. And I looked around, and there was a mixed group of people, some townies, some students, some teachers. And over the next 90 days, my last 3 months of college, I went there every single night and just came completely honest with who I was, what I was going through, and the fact that I sincerely wanted help and that left to my own devices, I can't do it. You know, I went in there and put all my cards on the table, and I had the complete willingness to abandon the person I was going in there, because as far as I saw it, there was nothing redeeming about who I'd become. And they told me, they just smiled and laughed at me. I would go in there every day just with all this putrid, toxic energy, telling them I hate people that smile. I hate sunshine. I hate Frisbees. They're like, whoa, buddy, everything's going to be all right. And they would just laugh. And then I would apologize for being so toxic. And then the old timers would be like laughing and saying, no, no, we feed off of it. They're like vampires feeding off my toxic newcomer energy. And, you know, slowly I became a little more adjusted. Even now I'm kind of still emotionally imbalanced. I wallow in depression. Earlier today I spent way too long listening to Radiohead and Soundgarden and just staring off into the distance. But fortunately I was given the opportunity to speak, you know, push myself out of that comfort zone to escape this depression which left, you know, without help, it attacks me. Try to shove some sobriety in here. The most important thing I learned was that you cannot think your way into right action. You have to act your way into right thinking. That's not even just AA literature. That is the modern view of psychology. It's this idea called cognitive dissonance, that when you start acting in a certain manner that reflects a person of a certain way of thinking, if your thoughts aren't in line with that, eventually your thoughts will just sort of adjust to fit your actions. That's kind of difficult to do, and really it takes a lot of faith in the beginning, and faith is something you also need. And something else that helped me a lot when I was struggling was people telling me that no matter where I was, that I was exactly where I needed to be and that everything was going to be all right. And I'd like to tell anybody, you know, questioning sobriety at the moment that it's worth it. Despite all the ups and downs and the vicissitudes, it truly is worth it. Thank you for letting me speak.